Chapter 13.
Pray to the partner Yun Shuno, the shamed one said. Pray that her promises will soon be fulfilled. Pray that the Jidai soon liberate us from those who oppress us with terror and violence.
So we pray, the tiny group echoed. Some of them, even as they chanted the response, did not cease from scratching at the fungus that tormented them. Beneath the sound of the ceremony was the constant whisper of fingers against inflamed skin.
So we pray,
Nomanor echoed the words with the others. Wearing an Uglith masker that disguised him as a common worker, he had infiltrated the tiny heretical sect. This was his second meeting. Infiltration was one of his skills, and he had fooled more suspicious folk than these fools. But no more, he thought as he scratched idly at one leg. These people are doomed. There were fewer than a dozen in the little group, which met in the shadowy lower levels of a minor office of the intendant's, a place normally empty at night. The group was led by a shamed one, a former member of the intendant caste, whose arm implant had gone spectacularly wrong, and still dripped a trail of slime wherever he went. Even workers should have had better taste than to listen to anything said by this pitiful creature. It was plain curiosity that had driven Nomanor to infiltrate the sect. Was this group such a mighty threat to orthodoxy as High Priest Jakan had said? Was the message of redemption by Jedi so powerful that it constituted a danger to the Yuuzhan Vong and all they stood for? When the meeting was over, Nomanor made his way out of the structure through a door used only by workers. The night of Yuuzhan Tar was cool and refreshingly free of the scent of the Shamed One's rotting flesh. A night breeze soothed Nomanor's flaming skin. Phosphorescent lichen shone on bits of undigested rubble, relics of the planet's old civilization that were gradually being broken down into more useful, basic elements. By the phosphorescent light, Nomanor wandered away from the center of the new Yuuzhan Vong city into an area of wreckage and half-dissolved rubble that had not yet been cleared for settlement. He wanted to be free of distraction so that he could think. The workers' heresy was an incoherent muddle, he thought. And yet, if the heretics had a leader, a prophet, no, a prophet, someone who knew how to adapt this doctrine into a weapon, then they would become something to reckon with. Obedience, yes, but not obedience to the ruling castes. Obedience to the prophet. Outward passivity and humility to those they considered their oppressors, but inside the keenest resentment and hatred, and an arrogance that demanded a galaxy. Someone, yes, someone like Nomanor, who had spread a religious doctrine on Romamul, that had caused the inhabitants to destroy themselves in an interplanetary war. Someone like Nomanor could make out of these heretics something very dangerous. All that was necessary was to create a tipping point, a point at which the arrogance and hatred could be brought to overwhelm passivity and caution, and then the heretics would become an army. Yes, it was lucky these heretics were being suppressed. Scratching himself on the elbows, Nomanor turned back toward the city, and in the sky saw the spiraling rainbows created by the Dovin basils on the great hovering palace that housed Shimra. Now there is power, he thought. But what rainbows have these heretics cast? He walked back toward the settled area, and to his surprise found himself walking along a clearly defined road. He hadn't realized that the Shapers had grown roads out this far. And then he saw something coming toward him along the road, a riding quednak with someone astride it. Nomanor stepped to the side of the road and, in his character as a simple worker, bowed in servitude with his arms crossed. It was only as the scaled, six-legged creature thumped by that Nomanor thought he recognized the silhouette of the rider. Onimi. That bulbous, misshapen head was unmistakable. What was the Supreme Overlord's familiar doing here, so far from the palace and any of the centers of government? Nomanor thought for a long moment as the beast thudded into the distance, and then followed. Kashi'ik was a brilliant green crescent in the glittering darkness of space.
and around it Jaina could see the silver gleam of the New Republic capital ships that had turned the planet into one of the New Republic's forward bases. She was in command of Trickster, tensed under the cognition hood, in case enemy were present as they jumped out of hyperspace. Instead, a message of jubilant welcome came from the elements of the New Republic fleet that had remained behind at their new base, and she and the rest of the fleet had stood down from their alert. Lobaka growled cheerfully.
"I'd love to join your family on Kashyyyk," Jaina said. "A furlough in the green trees would be ideal."
Just what she needed to ease the tension she felt in her shoulders and arms, the dirge of grief and sorrow that played in her mind, the sadness that flooded her heart. Lights flashed on the comm system that Lobaka had jacked into the Yuuzhan Vong ship, and the unit tweedled.
"Message from the flagship," Loi said.
"What does the general want?" Jaina wondered.
"It's not Farlander," the Wookiee said. "The message is from Admiral Creefe. He wants you and General Farlander to report on board Ral Roost at your earliest convenience," he says.
"And now we pay for our success," Jaina thought.
"O great warrior,
is this the Domatek of the noble intendant, Huli Krek?" Tattoos on the warrior's face creased as she scowled at Nomanor. She waved her amphistaff in the direction of the city.
"You are not permitted here. Get your miserable carcass back to your barracks."
Nomanor, still in his worker guise, bobbed in feigned humility.
"With all respect, O commander, if this is the Domutek of Huli Krek, then I am permitted here."
The warrior was not appeased by Numanor's casually promoting her 2 degrees.
"This is not the Domutek of Huli Krek. Now begone."
It was not the Domutek of Huli Krek, whom Numanor had just invented on the spot, but it was the heavily guarded Domutek to which the shamed one, Onimi, had traveled, a fact proven by Onimi's riding beast seen standing before the building and quietly licking a fungus-covered rock. The Domutek was a large, bulbous, three-lobed structure that radiated a faint, pinkish light. There was at least a platoon of warriors either on guard or camped in the vicinity, so whatever the function of the building might be, it was of some importance. And standing in the entrance to the Domutek, a pair of Yuuzhan Vong were in conversation, their distinctive living headdresses marking them as shapers.
"Oh, woe! Oh, misery! Oh, unhappiness!"
Slapping himself on the head repeatedly, Nomanor pranced about in a little circle. This was enough to attract 2 more warriors, one of them a subaltern, unusually short, with stringy hair.
"What is the meaning of this?" the subaltern demanded.
The warrior explained, and the subaltern turned to Nomanor.
"There is no Huli Krek here. Now get back to where you belong."
"But I belong at the Domutek of Huli Krek," Nomanor wailed. "I was given very explicit directions. Left at the square of hierarchy, then south to the boulevard of the crushing of the infidels, then right at the temple of the modeler, then on down the long road to the end."
He began slapping himself again. "Oh, woe! My supervisor will punish me."
"I'll punish you if you don't get out of here," the subaltern said.
He cocked his amphistaff over his shoulder.
Numanor fell on his face and groveled before the others. "May I beg the officer's pardon? May I ask where I went wrong?"
"You went wrong when you were born," one of the warriors joked, and the other laughed.
"Where is this Domutek?" Nomanor asked. "What is the name of this place, so that I can explain to my master Huli Krek how I came to be here?"
"This Domutek is for shapers only," the subaltern said.
His amphistaff slashed down like a whip, and fire burned along Nomanor's back.
"Now clear out before they stick you in their blasted cortex."
Nomanor scuttled away sideways like a great crustacean, then rose to his feet and scurried down the road. Inwardly, despite the pain that flamed down his back, he gave a smile of satisfaction. "Warriors are so predictable," he thought. Cortex was a shaper term for some kind of shaping protocol or technique, which meant that this was a shaper project secret enough to move some distance out of the capital, where its business could go on unobserved and important enough to station warriors as its permanent guard. The 2 shapers seen in the entrance only confirmed this. And Onimi was a part of it somehow.
Nomanor stumbled on a fault in the road, and at the jar, fresh pain shot along his back. That warrior hadn't held back when he'd slashed down with the amphistaff. Nomanor's teeth ground as he thought of the arrogant little pipsqueak with the weapon longer than he was, and he cast an angry glance over his shoulder at the sawed-off subaltern with his two warriors. "I'll remember this," he thought. And then he thought of the heretics at their meeting, the anger and hatred that they couldn't acknowledge even to themselves, and he thought, "Yes, this is how it starts." Jaina combed her hair and changed out of her coveralls to walking-out dress, which was as smart as she could get for the Admiral, since her full-dress uniform hadn't caught up to her as she'd moved through her last several postings. Walking-out dress, however, was still sufficiently formal that she felt uncomfortable, and kept tugging at her collar as she sat with Farlander in the shuttle that carried her to the Admiral's Bothan assault cruiser. One of Prefay's Bothan aides met Jaina and Farlander at the lock and escorted them to the Admiral's suite. The cruiser's air had a spicy alien scent. When they reached Prefay's quarters, they were kept waiting a quarter of an hour by a secretary until they were called in to meet the Admiral. Prefay was alone in a formal briefing room, standing at the head of a long, empty table. Farlander and Jaina approached the Admiral and saluted. "General Farlander and Major Solo reporting as ordered, Admiral." Prefay's milk-white fur rippled as he returned the salute. "You have your report?" "Yes, sir." Farlander handed the Admiral a disk. Prefay dropped in a reader and glanced at the information. "One capital ship lost, another disabled," he said. "Nearly 100 starfighters lost, with only 40% of the crews rescued. All in an unauthorized action to chase an enemy Supreme Commander who wasn't even there, and following an operational plan devised by a junior lieutenant." "Yes, sir," Farlander admitted. "And a stunning victory," Prefay continued, still reading. "7 enemy capital ships destroyed, 1 pair of transports holding thousands of warriors, and a Supreme Commander killed along with his flagship." His eyes lifted first to Jaina, then to Farlander. "My warmest congratulations to the both of you," he said. "I wish my other subordinates demonstrated this kind of initiative." He shook Farlander's hand. "Brilliant work. I will put you both in for commendations." Jaina flushed at the warmth of the Admiral's response. She felt the tension in her wire-strung muscles ease. "Thank you, sir," she murmured, and then was surprised to see Prefay step before her, then pause for a long moment with his gold-flecked violet eyes fixed on her. "I wish to see you in comparative privacy, in order that I might give you some news of your family." Jaina stared at him in rising horror, and felt herself brace for it, her parents dead or captured, or perhaps little Ben Skywalker ambushed in the maw and killed. "Your brother Jason has escaped the enemy and has arrived safely on Mon Calamari," Prefay said. "When you have a chance to catch up with your personal messages, no doubt you'll hear the story in more detail." Jaina stared at Prefay in cold astonishment. "Are you sure, sir?" she said. "I saw him and the Yuuzhan Vong. I was there." "Of course it's true," Prefay said. "Your brother's been on the Holonews. He's very much alive." Jaina could only gape at him. "Why didn't I know?" It had been Jaina who had insisted on the reality of Jason's death in the face of her mother's belief in his survival. "Why didn't he reach me through our twin bond?" she demanded of herself. And then an answer came to her. "Because I cut him off." She had been driven into a near-mad frenzy by Anakin's death and Jason's capture. She had embraced the dark and turned her life to vengeance. She had cut off all contact with those she loved, including Jason, who must have needed her dreadfully. She pictured Jason calling to her over and over and receiving no answer. "He must have thought I was dead. What kind of despair had she brought him?" She tasted bitter failure on her tongue. "Would you like to sit down, Jaina?"
Farlander's voice floated toward her from beyond the shadowy wall that cloaked her mind.
"Yes," she said, "if I may."
She groped her way to a chair, and as she lowered herself into it, she managed to remember the niceties. She looked up at Trieste Kreefe.
"Thank you, Admiral," she said. "I appreciate your telling me this way."
"It was the least I could do for our new hero," Kreefe said, as he took the seat at the head of the table. "You and General Farlander have given us a great victory, and I would like you to give me an informal briefing now, before I arrange a full staff conference tomorrow."
"Very good, sir," Farlander said.
Even as he answered Kreefe, his concerned eyes still rested on Jaina.
"Your tactics involving the Jedi?" Kreefe asked. "Creating a kind of meld? Were they successful?"
"They worked, but we had too few units with Jedi in them," Jaina said. "We need more Jedi in order to make it really useful. And even then it doesn't always work."
Her thoughts darkened as she remembered Mirker.
"If the Jedi aren't in agreement among themselves, the meld can fall apart."
Kreefe brushed aside all doubt. "I'll put in a request for as many Jedi pilots as they can send us. Who knows what the High Command will make of it?"
"Who knows?"
Jaina repeated. The New Republic had never quite decided what to do with Jedi in this war, but then the honors were even. The Jedi hadn't been quite sure what to do with themselves.
"I'd like to share some other news," Kreefe said. "I've just returned from Bathawi, where the mourning for my cousin Borsk Felya has now ended. While I was there, I managed to meet with a good many important Bothans, and I'm pleased to report that I achieved some success."
"That's very good, sir," Farlander said.
"As you may know, intrigue is common among Bothans," Kreefe said. "The periods when we are united as a species are rare, and usually occur only when we are facing a common danger, as we did during the Empire. But now, as a result of Chief of State Felya's death, the Bothan Council has decided to declare that the highest state of war now exists between Bathawi and the Yuuzhan Vong."
Something in Kreefe's phrasing caused Jaina to look up.
"Highest state of war?" she repeated. "But you're at war already, aren't you?"
Kreefe looked solemn.
"We've been in what you could describe as an ordinary state of war," he said. "The highest state of war, it is called Arcry, was not declared even in the days of Palpatine. Arcry has been declared only twice in our past, and was declared only when our survival as a species seemed to be at stake. It means that we will declare total war against our enemy, and not cease until he has been completely destroyed."
"You've destroyed species?" General Farlander asked.
"In the distant past," Kreefe said, "we did not cease our Arcry until our enemies were destroyed to the last individual, the names written out of the histories, and their planets reduced to dust floating on the stellar wind."
He placed his hands on the tabletop, his white fur reflecting perfectly in its dark, polished surface.
"So shall we do with the Yuuzhan Vong," he said. "They shall become dust, or we shall become dust ourselves."
Jaina looked at Kreefe's determined face, and a chill ran up her spine at the quiet certainty that lay behind his words. Nenyim couldn't quite suppress a shudder as she reached toward the Shamed One, if only to hand him a bladder flask. Nor could she suppress her alarm as he opened the flask immediately and began splashing the balm on his misshapen body. The tendrils on her headdress waved in agitation.
"This is for the Supreme Overlord," she said.
"I'll save enough for Shimra," Onimi said.
"There must be enough for the other shapers," Nenyim said. "They must be able to create tons of—"
"I know, Master Heretic Shaper," Onimi said. "I'll leave enough for the shapers."
He slathered the pale green lotion over his grayish, inflamed flesh and sighed.
"It works," he said.
"Of course it works," Nenyim snapped.
Even if Onimi was her only conduit to the Supreme Overlord, his impudence was often more than she could bear. Onimi seemed oblivious to the Shaper's loathing. "Think of all the hours of labor you've saved us," he said. "All that scratching." The bomb had certainly saved Nen Yim's own sanity, since she had returned from Sabang La's command to work on Yuuzhan Tar, directly under Shimra. She had been one of the worst affected of the itching plague's victims. She had barely been able to focus her mind to the point that she could puzzle out an antidote. She and Onimi faced each other in a room screened off by membranous partitions that pulsed with bright, oxygenated blood. Phosphorescent lichen filled the air with a reddish light that was useful when dealing with photosensitive tissues. The tang of the lotion contrasted with the organic odors that normally filled the air. The coppery scent of blood or the loamy scent of undifferentiated protoplasm. The tissue on which Nen Yim performed her grafts, forced mutations, and other experiments. Performed her heresy. The eighth cortex was known to the Yuuzhan Vong as the ultimate grade of shaper knowledge, the most refined and perfect of the procedures given by the gods in ancient times, known only to the Supreme Overlord and the few master shapers with whom he shared the knowledge. Only the handful who had seen the eighth cortex knew that it was a fraud. It was, in fact, practically empty. It contained only a few advanced techniques, most of which Shimra had already given to his people. Yuuzhan Vong knowledge had reached its end, and so Shimra had found Nen Yim, a shaper already convicted of the heresy of not merely repeating the procedures given the Yuuzhan Vong in ancient times, but actually seeking new knowledge. It was now the task of Nen Yim and her adepts to create the eighth cortex, to provide the new knowledge and new procedures that would enable the Yuuzhan Vong to win the war and exist successfully in their new homeland. Nen Yim had first call on any Yuuzhan Vong resources. Her research took first priority in any dispute, even over urgent war aims. Her team was housed in its own Damutek, isolated and guarded. Her only visitor was Onimi, her direct conduit to the Supreme Overlord. But the guards, she knew, were not simply to prevent an enemy from interfering. They were to prevent Nen Yim and her own people from escaping to contaminate other Yuuzhan Vong with their heretical ideas. The Yuuzhan Vong chosen for the Eighth Cortex project were insulated from the rest of their own race. Insulated like a plague. Nen Yim more than half suspected that after the project's completion, after the Eighth Cortex was filled with 1,001 useful shaping protocols, she and her co-workers and Onimi would be quietly liquidated, and all record of their existence erased. But should that happen, Nen Yim was prepared to accept it. She had accepted death more than once in her life already. All life, after all, was preparation for death, and once the Eighth Cortex was filled, she would have contributed her whole life's adventure to the defeat of the infidels and the greatness of her people. Onimi finished applying the lotion and straightened to the full height of his gangling limbs. "This cure is limited, I understand." "Yes, it will kill any infection on contact, but you can always be reinfected." Onimi's unsettling eyes, one lower than the other, focused on her. "And we will be reinfected, yes?"
"I'm afraid so. The spore is everywhere."
"Can the world brain be instructed to produce an organism that will kill the spore? Some kind of virus or bacterium that can devour the plague?" Nen Yim hesitated.
"I fear," she dared to say, "that the world brain may be the problem."
The room's ruddy light shone eerily on Onimi's eyes, now suddenly alert. His tilted slash of a mouth twitched.
"How can this be, Master Shaper?" he asked.
"I have examined the organism that causes the itching plague most carefully. Though further examination would be necessary to confirm this, I believe that the spore and the fungus it causes are of Yuuzhan Vong origin, not native to Yuuzhan Tar."
A hiss escaped Onimi's lips. "Chagang Hul, that imbecile! He has contaminated the world brain!" He paused for a moment's thought.
Can you instruct the world brain to cease production of the spore?
Perhaps.
I'd have to put aside my other work.
Don't, then. A new clan has been put in charge of the world-shaping project and the world brain. Let the work be theirs.
His expression grew thoughtful.
The gods can speak to Shimra on the matter, and he can then advise the new shapers.
Distaste flooded Nen-Yim. She might be a heretic, but even she had more respect for the gods than to claim her knowledge was of divine origin.
The Supreme Overlord wants you to concentrate on the Yamask project, Onimi went on. We must develop a war coordinator that is free from the infidel's attempts to manipulate the gravity spectrum. To this end, the Supreme Overlord has granted you absolution in advance for investigating any of the enemy's machines and weapons.
Nen-Yim feigned surprise.
If we knew how the infidels were producing the interference, she said, the work would be easier. It is known that the infidels have gravity manipulation devices called repulsor lifts, not as flexible or as useful as our own Dovin basils, but perhaps operating on the same principles. They might have modified these to interfere with the Yamasks.
Nen-Yim considered. Would it be possible to bring me one of these repulsor lifts?
Onimi gave a mirthless smile. I shall have one delivered, along with a translation of its specifications.
Please see they are protected from our metal-destroying bacteria.
Yes, of course.
His lopsided eyes glimmered.
Shimra prays daily for a solution to this problem. May I say the gods will provide an answer soon?
The gods should first provide a repulsor lift.
Onimi gave a bow and a cross-armed salute, but his head was tilted at an ironic angle. May your efforts prosper, Master Shaper, he said. And yours, Onimi?
The deformed figure made his way out of the chamber. Nen-Yim watched him leave, her lips twitching with distaste.
Whatever they may be, creature, she repeated, whatever they may be.